This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. Bob McKenzie joins me from Dublin in Ireland. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Welcome to you too, Henry.
Whatever did happen to Bruce Springsteen?
Bruce Springsteen. Do you know, I mean, he's just the gift that keeps giving, isn't he?
Of course he is.
I mean, as you know, I am a massive, massive fan of Springsteen, and I've been going on all his tours since the Born in the USA tour in 85. So, a long-time fan. Next summer when I see him will be shows number 54 and 55 for me. I've seen him all over Europe. I've also seen him in the States. I'm a big, big fan. But he's just released a very interesting album called Only the Strong Survive. And a lot of people have been quite sniffy about it because, of course, Rod Stewart, for instance, has spent the last 20 years doing the Great American Songbook. Now, basically what this album is it's an album of 15 soul covers. And basically what it is it's songs that Springsteen sang before he was Springsteen, if you know what I mean. So basically before he had all these wonderful songs that he and his band could sing, he sang the classics in the pubs and the bars of New Jersey and New York. Basically, that's what this is. So he decided to do this album, and it's absolutely brilliant, I have to say. It just came out last Friday. He is, of course, about to start a tour early next year. He begins in the States in February. He'll be over here in Europe in the spring. He's here in Dublin early May. And it just so happens that the two gigs I'm going to, one of them is the day before my birthday, one of them is the day after my birthday, and Bruce is taking the night off for my birthday, which I think is good of him.
It's very, very decent of him. Do you often wonder why a lot of the older singers, let's say, that they still hold... I mean, I know that you know, Bruce Springsteen is kind of your musical god, but just generally speaking, why the likes of Rod Stewart...
Bar Elvis, he would be, yeah. I mean Elvis will forever be at the top of the pantheon. No. For obvious reasons, because it was my first musical love. Also, the fact that Elvis is, for me, the only artist I can think of who could sing any genre. He did it all from opera to gospel and back again. He was just an incredible vocal talent, shall we say. I mean, himself and Sinatra were the two greatest interpreters of other people's songs of the 20th century, without a shadow of a doubt. But Springsteen, I saw him first in 85. And I've been hooked ever since. I think I've missed one tour, which was the Seeger Sessions, which was when he went on the road doing all Pete Seeger's old songs and a lot of American folk songs. And that was because he only did one gig in Dublin and it sold out in like 10 seconds. And of course, he sells out very, very quickly. As soon as he announces that he's going on tour, I had people in the UK trying to source me tickets while I tried to source them tickets as well. So, you know, there's a great camaraderie between us tramps, as we like to be known, because tramps like us, baby, we were born to run. So we try and help each other out trying to get tickets. And of course, there's been a big controversial thing over Springsteen's ticket sales because they weren't capped. Over here, they were. In Ireland, we were fine. I paid €140 per ticket. Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know what that would be in Australian money, but it's expensive. But
that's like $260 in Australia, which seems expensive to me.
Springsteen is different to any other act in the world because he does at least 3 hours because he has such a fantastic back catalogue, and he never does the same show twice. Like, he's not one of these guys who has a set list and he sticks to it. He will change the set list every single time he goes out on that stage. So you can see him two or three nights in a row, and every night it's a different vibe, it's a different show, there's a different feeling. And that's why I think he's so special.
When you go to these concerts, and I'm talking more recently, not back in 1985, what sort of demographic is in the audience? I mean, do you see young people in the audience?
Yes. Not as many as you would like. I think that's fair to say. But you see, the thing about it is that over the last 5 years, Springsteen is finally getting his due, I think, in the pantheon of American singer-songwriters, and he's now rated up there with the likes of Bob Dylan, which is exactly as it should be, because for me, he is one of the great American songwriters alongside Bob Dylan. And the stuff that he's done in the last few years, he's been very, very prolific. He did a Broadway show that was only supposed to run for a month and ran for 18 months.
Oh, my God.
He did the Western Stars album, which was a solo album, which is full of absolutely beautiful California soft rock tracks with a full orchestra that he recorded in his barn at Colts Neck in New Jersey. He's also brought out an album with the E Street Band, Letter to You. And as soon as I heard the album, I thought to myself, this album is meant to be played live. So we're looking forward to hearing a lot of these new songs next year on the tour, Henry. But the great thing about it is that Springsteen is one of these guys, he's very collaborative in terms of, if there's somebody at one of his gigs that he thinks the crowd might like to see, he will bring them up. Now, he gave me one of the greatest moments of my gig-going career in 1993 at the RDS in Dublin, when he brought on the great Jerry Lee Lewis.
Oh,
I will never ever forget it. I was 10 feet away from Jerry Lee Lewis.
Amazing.
And I mean, you know, that is a bonus, whatever way you want to look at it. You can talk about what a bad man Jerry Lee Lewis was, but alongside the likes of Chuck Berry, Elvis, he was one of the godfathers of rock and roll. So to see that man up close, even just for a few minutes, was just spectacular for me. You know, because I'm such a student of the music, if you like, and you know me, I love my music. So to see somebody like him, and then you've got the flip side of it. When he's playing in Dublin and he brings Bono up, and then Bono rips the arse out of one of his songs and ruins the gig for me.
Yeah, are you a fan of Bono?
I'm not a fan of Bono, but I'm a fan of U2. I love U2 as a band. I think Bono is an absolute pox. I have been mistaken for him on holiday on far too many occasions to catalogue, which is very distressing for me.
I'm sure.
So bad that one of my friends said that if he ever met Bono, he would say to him, "Who do you think you are, Bob McKenzie?" So, you know, it's got that bad over the years. But Bono keeps really poor company, and he also makes ridiculous statements. And of course, at the moment, he's got his autobiography out, which is going to sell by the wheelbarrow. I've been running it on my book club. I, as I said, love U2 as a band, one of the greatest live bands of all time, without a shadow of a doubt, up there even with the great Springsteen for me as a live act. And of course, they went through that run of albums, late 80s, right the way through the 90s, where they just couldn't put a foot wrong. And it was some of the most fantastic work that any Irish band has ever done. But Bono himself, you can keep him as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm interested to ask.
With a great band, but he needs to shut his gob, to be honest.
Yeah, one thing that irks me about Bono is that, by the way, that book you're talking about, he's spruiking it all over the nighttime shows, TV shows in America at the moment. The thing about Bono that has always annoyed me is that he's always been on the tails of Bob.
Yes, of course, Bob Geldof from the Boomtown.
Sorry, I should have made that clear. But I always found that, you know, back in the 80s with Live Aid and that stuff like that, and all the political stuff.
I mean, let's put it this way. Like, I've met Bob a couple of times. And
so have I actually.
I actually once, bizarrely, in my hometown in England, many, many years ago, before I even moved to Ireland, I was working in a hotel and I was on my break and I went across the road and it was a seaside town. And there was a cafe across the road that I go to for a cup of coffee called the Lobster Pot, which, of course, is a lovely name when you're down by the sea. And it was a very wet and windy day and the rain was hopping off the window. And I went in there and the only other people in there were Bob and Paula.
And are you kidding me?
Peaches was a baby at the time. They used to live in Faversham, which is a few miles up the coast from Deal, which is where I'm from in the southeast of England. And I spent a very happy hour sat there talking to Bob about this, that, and the other, you know. And obviously, because I have family in Bob's neck of the woods, you know, the conversation moved quite easily, as you can imagine.
What did you talk about?
We talked about Deal. We talked about Kent. We talked about Ireland, and you know the emigrant experience, if you like, about how hard it was, you know, to get things done if you were Irish in England at that time. This was the late '70s, early '80s, of course. So this would probably been about 83, 84, maybe. So it was just before Bob did Live-O. It was about 18 months before he came up with the brilliant idea of Do They Know It's Christmas, and then Live Aid, obviously, the following summer. So very interesting guy, Bob. And I would agree with you to an extent, but what I would say to you is that Bono, at the risk of being, you know, sued completely, Bono is very much, you know, what we would call a star fecker in terms of he collects names, doesn't he? I mean, like, he's friends with people like Tony Blair and George Bush.
Yes.
There's no reason for that man to be friends with two war criminals.
Mm.
You know, there's no reason for it. He's been photographed shaking hands with Putin. You know, he's been involved in things that he shouldn't be involved in. And as well as that, you were talking about the way that he's shilling this book across all the American talk shows.
Mm.
He's also doing a Bruce, because Bruce, of course, famous, as we were saying, did that Broadway show where he did a few tunes and told a few stories. That's what Bono's doing with the book. He's going to do a few shows. So he did one in San Francisco the other night, and the critic absolutely panned it. So you can imagine the reception he's going to get in Ireland when he does it. He will probably get absolutely hammered. I mean, we're already fed up about the book, and it's only just out, Henry. So, I think the book will sell very, very well. It will probably be the number one seller for Christmas, certainly in this country. But I would be very, very surprised if some Egypt doesn't send it to me for Christmas, knowing that I don't want it. Same as last year.
Just to piss you off, right?
When Springsteen and Obama brought the book out, my cousin bought it for me at great expense, just to piss me off because he knew I didn't want it. So there you go. But, you know, Bono's Bono, isn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, he's been around a long time. But I just found him very, you know, he was really lazy in these interviews at the talk shows in America. It's like he couldn't be bothered almost, you know, and there's this sense.
And what is it with the cheap hair dye from Superdrug? What is going on? He looks like me granny got a bad hair dye.
I didn't actually notice that.
It's like the brilliant line from the great Boy George, who, of course, is in your neck of the woods at the moment doing I'm a Celebrity. Mm. And he once made a great gag about Elton John. He said, Elton John, all that money and still has hair like a dinner lady. which is exactly how I feel about Bono's hair, to be honest.
Oh, dear. I want to ask...
As you know, Henry, yes. I have a very fine head of hair, so I can make these comments, you know?
Indeed, you can. You can afford to do so. I just wanted to ask you generally about, you know, I live in a very young suburb, if you like. The demographic is young. And they have a party. Well, they had a party the other night, and they were playing nothing but 70s and 80s music. And you have to wonder, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound old-fashioned with this, but why aren't they playing Rihanna and stuff like that? Why is it always 70s and 80s music? What do you think?
Because 70s and 80s music is much better than the rubbish that they come up with today. It's as simple as that.
But they might just think that we're being, you know, old fuddy-duddies saying this. But the thing is, they might, you know, they might think that we are that, but they're still using the music from our era.
Listen, Henry, you know yourself. Like, the great music is great music. It doesn't matter what era it comes from.
Mm.
I mean, you listen to music now from the 80s, say, right?
Mm.
And you listen to the Human League.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Human League, their music still sounds as brilliantly fresh as it did in the 80s when they first released it. Yes. And it's the same with a lot of bands from that era. Their music has stood the test of time. Same with a lot of the bands from the 70s, the likes of Led Zepp. And, you know, Elton John is still dining out on his stuff that he did in the 70s. The man hasn't done anything new in 30 years. It's like Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder is one of the best known musicians and performers in the history of music. The man hasn't released an album in 30 years.
Should they be doing that, Bob?
I think it depends on the quality of what they've done. I mean, Springsteen is one of those who has constantly mixed it up over the years. I mean, we were talking about that earlier, about the fact that, you know, he's been so prolific these last few years since just before lockdown, and he's tried new stuff and he's kept reinventing himself, if you like. Whereas people like Elton, they're just going to take the money and do, you know, the final farewell tour. I mean, Elton has done at least three farewell tours as far as I'm aware.
I was going to say, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, Elton is not what he was. Let's be fair. Let's be honest. The voice isn't there anymore. His songs will forever stand the test of time. Elton John is one of the greatest singer-songwriters that the UK has ever produced. He's not quite David Bowie, but then again, who is? But he is, from that era, one of the greatest that the UK have ever produced. And, of course, himself, Bowie, Rod Stewart, they were all around the scene around the same time with the Beatles and that. And they all knew each other very, very well. They've all known each other for 60, 70 years.
Yeah, crazy.
I mean, there's a great story about, did you hear the story about Rod Stewart and Elton John and the Christmas presents?
No.
This is a really good story. Rod and Elton are very old friends. They even call each other by female names. They're that good as friends. I think Rod calls Elton Doris. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this one Christmas anyway, Rod decided that he'd push the boat out. And so he got the Christmas present for Elton, sent it over to him. And the Christmas present that he got for Elton was a diamond encrusted fridge with some bolly in it, right?
Yeah.
And he spent, you know, I don't know, a few thousand on this, you know? Then he gets the gift from Elton. It's a £1 million Picasso.
My God.
Now that shows you about Elton John. It's opulence with Elton.
Well, yes.
Do you know what I mean? And like Rod said, it like his jaw genuinely hit the floor when he saw what Elton had given him for Christmas. £1 million Picasso.
But do you think that it you know, money matters at all to these people? I mean, they're multimillionaires, obviously. I would even put a B in front of heirs. Money probably doesn't matter, but it's probably something they're having a laugh with each other, you know. As you say, they're really good friends.
Well, I mean, the thing about Elton John is that, you know, as is famously been documented, the man used to spend $250,000 a year on flowers. So, you know, Elton has always been, you know, one of those who was... Elton is sort of like Liberace without the great outfits, you know? I mean, Liberace would be very similar to Elton John in terms of, you know, the way that he would gift things to people and blah, blah. Elvis was the same. I mean, Elvis would give strangers Cadillacs.
Yes, I heard that, yes.
So, you know, they're a different beast, aren't they? You know, these rock stars are a completely different beast to you and I.
And if you look at young people now, do you think, like, let me ask you this, do you have any, are you a fan of any of the current people in the top 20, let's say, the top 20 charts, like Rihanna and the likes? Are you a fan of any of these people of this genre?
I would have a lot of time for Taylor Swift, because I think she's a very, very clever songwriter. She also, because of the way that she is fighting the record companies for her own music to be owned by her. So I have a lot of time for her as both a campaigner and as an artist.
Is she the artist formerly known as Taylor?
That's her, yes. but she's on tour at the same time as Springsteen. He was asked last night on Fallon, will he be going to see Taylor Swift? And he said, yes, he said, because my daughter's going to make me see Taylor Swift. Now, this is an interesting thing. And then Jimmy Fallon said to him, but, you know, there's a rumour that you might go on stage with her and she might go on stage with you. And he said very tellingly that Taylor Swift is welcome to join the E Street Band anytime. So that could be a real moment to see Bruce with somebody like Taylor Swift, who's very modern, you know, very much of this era. I mean, Ed Sheeran, brilliant songwriter, but people are very sniffy about him because he's like just this ginger kid with a guitar. I like him. I think he's a very, very good singer-songwriter. The Killers are a band I like of the current bands. But there's a backstory with The Killers and Springsteen in that Brandon Flowers, the lead singer of The Killers, his mum and dad are tramps. So they followed Springsteen all over America, all around the world over the years. So basically Brandon was reared with Springsteen as his soundtrack. Now, recently they got together and did a song which was absolutely brilliant. I think it's called American Dirt, and it's absolutely brilliant. But Bruce and Brandon, they gel vocally, if you know what I mean, because this song is written very much as if Springsteen wrote it, but it's written by Brandon Flowers deliberately for him and Springsteen to sing. So you're seeing a lot of these bands today. They are looking at the likes of Bruce for collaborations, which is great, I think, because it's two different musical eras combining to produce something a bit different, which is always good, I think, for music, Henry.
Yes, it's a generation merge when you think about it, between, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, people go on about, you know, when artists release duet records. For me, the most brilliant duet of all time, without a shadow of a doubt, is Bing Crosby and David Bowie.
Wow.
From 1978.
I've seen that, yes.
I'm a Boy, He's on Earth.
That was a Christmas song,
whoever came
yeah.
up with the idea of doing that was an absolute genius. Now, of course, as you are well aware, by the time this was released as a Christmas single and made number one, Bing was already dead.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Bing recorded a Christmas special in 1978 in England in July, and then he died at the end of August, just a couple of weeks after Elvis Presley. So by the time this Christmas special was aired and the single was released, Bing was already dead. But it was just the juxtaposition of David Bowie's voice and Bing Crosby's voice. Now, Bing Crosby, for me, was another one who was one of the great interpreters of other people's songs. You had him, you had Frank Sinatra, you had Dean Martin. All of these guys knew how to sing a song.
And
Springsteen, Springsteen is very, very similar in that way. If you listen to this new album, it's soul, it's R&B, it's stuff that he's been singing for 50 years. And his voice is, you can hear the joy in it when you listen to these tracks. You can see he's enjoying himself. I mean, he actually said that he produced another album and didn't like it, so he threw it away. He's done that a lot. There are a lot of albums sat there in Bruce's vault that, you know, he has stuff like, I mean, on his last album with the E Street Band, he put in two songs that he actually wrote in the early 70s, but had never put on a record.
Isn't that amazing, isn't it? Like 40 years later.
The fact that, you know, he has these things in his locker. And then there was an album called The Promise, which was all the outtakes from Darkness on the Edge of Town, the double album. So, you know, over the years, he's released a lot more. And, of course, Bruce is very big on releasing his bootlegs officially. He releases his gigs as bootlegs, but they're official bootlegs from the Bruce Springsteen archives, if you like. So any gig that Bruce has ever done, you can probably get it perfectly legally through his website, which is absolutely brilliant.
And that is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Bob, we're running out of time. Our conversations are always fast and furious here on Bondi Tunes. Would you like to, I don't know what song you're going to pick of Bruce Springsteen's to go out with?
Well, I will pick one off of the new album, and it's called Do I Love You? Indeed I Do.